the EFL. It's the Football League podcast wondering if the Rugby World Cup will ever end. Coming up, we got the boss of Wimbledon on, Ace. Sheffield Wednesday look to a roll to get them out the soup. It's Meadow Payne for Notts as Stags Run Riot. And Wrexham and Lake goals going together like Rob and Ryan. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And it's a little bit different for us this week. Adrian Clark is sunning himself in Dubai. Can you believe it? So it's just me and Sam Parkin for now, although we've got a very special guest on with us later. Sam, you've been sunning yourself in, checks notes, Scotland this weekend. Not quite Dubai, but I hope you had a nice time anyway.
It was really nice, mate. Yeah, the initial idea was Margate, and then I upgraded to Glasgow. It was the 10-year anniversary of the Scottish League Cup win of my old St Mirren team. So yeah, dinner on the Friday and then just wandered around some old haunts on the Saturday. Left like feeling, if Glasgow had the sun, one of the best cities in the world. Honestly, I love that place so much. I had so much fun just wandering about. The West End of Glasgow is just a dream. But my goodness, it was cold. The wind. I was just thinking I could so nearly live here, but I just couldn't put my youngest boy through it. He hates the wind, and the wind was perishing. But what a place.
All right. So Glasgow for Sam, Dubai for Clarkie, me, Paw Patrol movie. Was I expecting a cameo from Sir Trevor McDonald? I was not, but it was pretty good. You're right to look that surprised, Sam.
Used to be my school fate most years. Sheen resident.
Yeah. Okay. South of London. He didn't divert too much from type. He plays a newsreader, but he did a good job of it. Right, before we get going, I mentioned Quinbet are our sponsors. They have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, we're going to talk to an EFL gaffer next. Well, I'm very pleased to say that we've got the AFC Wimbledon gaffer, Johnny Jackson, back on the pod with us. Johnny, it's 10:30 on a Monday morning. What does your day look like? Obviously, game on Saturday. What are the plans training-wise for today?
Yeah, so we normally have a little bit of a later start on a Monday. We just give the lads an extra hour in bed Monday morning, so we start a bit later. So normally I'd be out on the training ground already, but managed to speak to you guys this morning, and then it'll be a recovery type session for a lot of the lads that played, you know, the bulk of the game on Saturday. A bit more of a working group. We've actually got a behind closed doors friendly tomorrow, so we'll be doing a little bit of match prep on that, just for some of the lads who haven't been playing so much. They need. We've got lads coming back from injury as well that could do with some game time. So we'll be doing a bit of work on that, and that's what our Monday will be.
Right. In my head, I hear the phrase recovery session a lot. To me, that's like a 20-minute jog, do a few free kicks, and then go and have an ice bath. Is that anywhere near accurate?
Yeah, it's not far off, to be honest. I'm big on everyone to get outside if they can. You know, some of the older lads, if you like, in the squad probably might not even go outside today, and it'll be more sort of gym-based recovery. But I like to get many of the lads out on their feet on the grass with the boots on, getting a touch of the ball, especially after a defeat. Actually, I think it's nice to get everyone out there and just get sort of, you know, get them at it a little bit, get a smile on their face, get touches of the ball. So it won't be long, it won't be strenuous, but certainly there'll be a bit of work involved.
How do you reflect on Saturday then? Now you've had, 48 hours to think about it. Are you saying it was an unlucky one? I mean, you had more possession, more shots, should have had a pen. Pretty frustrating, all in all.
Yeah, it was frustrating because I felt we should have won the game. You know, so to come away with not even a point was a tough one to take. So, yeah, I'm still frustrated. Having watched it back, I thought the performance was decent. We certainly created the better chances in the game. I think Bradford had three, really, including the goal. We've obviously had maybe five or six hit the inside of the post, a couple that sort of flashed across the face, a couple that I would expect us to take. So, you know, that's on us. The bit that's not on us is, you know, a blatant penalty not given, which is tough to take. So, yeah, on reflection, you know, performance levels are still there. And even in the two defeats that we have suffered, I think we've deserve something from, and I think sort of we've literally every game so far this season we've created more than the opposition. So perhaps take away the Stockport game. So we you know, performance levels are good. We want that to translate into more points. I feel like we should have more on the board than we've actually got, to be honest. But it's important that, you know, you don't get too carried away when you do suffer a defeat, especially the nature of it. It was a bit, you know, no disrespect to Bradford, but I think if you ask Kev, he'd say it was a little bit of a smash and grab, and that's credit to them. They done a job on the day and got the win.
John, I saw some of the chances this morning, and yeah, got me thinking. Al Hamady got the hat trick in the last home game. How frustrating is it for you that has to go away on international duty? Are you in the in a spot where you think that the game should be off in those scenarios? Because when it's such an integral player, although it's only one, I know your keeper was away as well, your number two, but that must be so frustrating for you.
It is, yeah. It's annoying, Sam. Like you say, on the back of in the last home game, we're on a great run of form going into that game. We really fancied our chances, and that's not to say that we can't win a game without him. But if you look at the two games that we have lost this season, it's been when he's been away on international duty, and we've had a couple of key players missing. Ryan Johnson missed the game at the weekend in the Stockport defeat. Al Hamady was away. Joe Lewis couldn't play because of his parent club, and Reeves and Little were out injured. So I think even in the defeats, there's been mitigations as far as, you know, we haven't necessarily had our strongest 11 on the pitch. And that's frustrating. I get it. I mean, we're delighted as a club for the lad spirits. He loves playing for his country. So, you know, it is one of those things. It's unfortunate that we couldn't muster a, you know, an under 18 Welsh international or something that we could have plucked out to get that third one, because we probably would have called the game off with a couple of key men missing. But unfortunately, rules are you got to have three. We've only got two. That's something we're going to have to deal with this season, and we're going to have to find ways of dealing with it better. Davison came in, and, you know, Davison's a good player at the level, isn't he? But obviously, he hasn't been playing as much as Al Hamady. So, yeah, you know, you do look back and think, what if? But this situation we find ourselves in, it's until we get a third international. Maybe Omar Bugle can get the Lebanon call up. We don't know yet, but we've only got two at the minute.
You mentioned Josh Davison there. I saw Nick Godwin at BBC London tweeting before the game on Saturday that hadn't his missus given birth at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning, and then he goes straight into the team. That's not exactly the ideal preparation for a game.
Yeah, it was about midnight. So Josh, we obviously spoke to him as it happened and in the morning, and you know, he was there for the birth, but then he said he got himself home, got plenty of rest. So, you know, it's not the ideal situation, is it? But I've been in that situation before, and you're running on adrenaline anyway, because it's his first child. It's a different feeling to anything he would have experienced. So he certainly had loads of energy about him. We probably didn't on the day, you know, provide enough ammo for him, to be honest. The chances fell to Armani Little, had a great chance. Omar Bugles had two or three really good ones, and they never really fell Josh's way, but it wasn't through lack of effort or energy.
If we look a bit more broadly at League Two, you're eighth, what, a point outside the playoffs. It's a tough old league this season, right? Because you got Stockport, who went close last season. They got plenty of money. Mansfield are always there or thereabouts. And then you've got Notts and Wrexham added into the mix. Obviously, before Saturday, Notts had been pretty phenomenal. Wrexham, we know all about their story. It's going to take some effort from you, isn't it, to get in, stay amongst those kind of teams for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's a really tough league. I think it's probably as strong a league too as we've seen, to be honest, certainly in years. So we know we're up against it as far as who we're competing with, what we're competing with as far as resources and stuff like that. But got real confidence in my team and my squad. And like I say, if you look at the data, the stats, the performances that we've been putting in, I feel like we've gone a little bit under the radar, and that we've matched anyone. You know, we went to Mansfield last week, get a really creditable 0-0, a game again that I think we should win. They should have gone down to 10 men in the second half. We missed a penalty. So, and then they go to Notts and put four past them. So it is a really strange league. You know, even, you know, you look at Notts and Wrexham, who big hitters. Wrexham, I think, have conceded three times this season. Notts have been it for four a couple of times. So it is such a strange league, and it throws up some strange results at times. We haven't been on the end of one of those. We've we've had two defeats in really close games, and the rest, you know, haven't lost. So I feel like we're capable of mixing it. It's about consistency. It's about trying to keep everyone fit. Yeah, if we can keep the real, you know, the bulk of our squad together, I think on our day, I think we're capable of mixing it with all of that. Well, we've already shown that. So, but that's like a quarter of a season sample size so far. So we've obviously got to recreate that. But yeah, I'm happy with the group that I've got. I'm happy with how we're doing. I feel like I still, you know, if we'd have won Saturday, we would have gone, I think, maybe second. You lose and you drop to eighth. So it just shows how tight it is at the top there as well. So it's going to be about the consistency. The teams that can put runner results together, like a Stockport, who I think they won 7 now on the bounce. And obviously that's catapulted them to the top. So we just got to try and stay in and around it, in and amongst it, picking up points, try and have some consistency about us, and see where it takes us.
Johnny, the away form, is that a tactical thing? Is it as simple as that, that you got more space and at Plough Lane teams are sitting in more?
Yeah, perhaps, Sam. I don't think the performance levels have been any different, to be honest. It's just the way sometimes that games pan out, it can play into our strengths. You know, when we've got a really good defensive shape about us and we've got a lot of pace in transition, that can sometimes translate better away from home, where perhaps at home you do have more of the ball and teams make it a bit more difficult. But even in those home games, you know, I'd say the Crewe game, I look back on the Crewe game that we ended up drawing, it's probably the best we played. And certainly it's the most we created in a game. I mean, the chances in that game were incredible, really. We should have scored 6 goals at least. So performance levels have been there. I think it's just a bit of an anomaly, really, why we haven't picked up as many points. But probably if you really done a deep dive into it, perhaps teams have, you know, come at you a little bit more when they're at home than they do at Plough Lane. And obviously when teams open up against us, I think that's probably when we're at our most dangerous at times. So we can, you know, like I say, a lot of pace on the counter attack, and we're happy at times to not have the football and wait for our openings.
So the only away game you've lost this season was at Stamford Bridge in the League Cup at the end of August. Sam and I were there for that one for Chelsea TV. He was like a proud dad looking down at the touchline at the end of the game. And where does that rank in terms of your managerial career? Because it was a brilliant night for you, despite losing the game, wasn't it? You took so many fans there, filling the shed end, terrific atmosphere and a great performance as well. You must have been beaming with pride at the end of it.
Oh yeah, for sure I was. I mean, that was right up there with one of the best nights I've had in management. You know, to test yourself on that stage against that manager, against the players that they had on the pitch, and to try and set your team up to be hard to beat with a threat as well. You know, not go in there just to avoid defeat, go in there with a bravery about us to try and go and win the game, which I think we certainly did. So that filled me with pride. I was gutted, I'll be honest, because I felt like just in a couple of key moments, you know, if you look at the goals, a rash penalty we gave away right on half time, and even the winning goals on the stake, and they didn't have their first shot on goal until that penalty on the stroke of half time. So I honestly felt like it was a game we could win. But yeah, you know, no one expected that. And I think we came out of it with a real credit to, you know, as a club, the support that we took there, you know, what the players are able to do on the pitch. And we give them a real fright. They had to bring on the big guns, didn't they, just to get the job done. So, but we was out of the cup as well, which I didn't want to be. So it's, really, you know, great experience. Really, really proud moment for me and my team. But, you know, we all still want to win every game that we play. So there was always that little bit of what if, you know.
I would say that Sam and I were gutted on your behalf, but Chelsea pay us by the game and they're not in Europe this season, so that'd be disingenuous. We absolutely need that cup run. We got kids to feed. Right, let's box off the Wimbledon chat there. We're going to talk about a couple of new managers next. So Sheffield Wednesday have appointed the former Germany assistant coach Danny Roll as their new manager. He's a 34-year-old, replaces Zisco Munoz. He was sacked, having overseen the club's worst ever start to a season. It's his first ever managerial position. Johnny, he's going into this one in a club in a state of crisis. Do you think that might help him, as it's his first managerial job and therefore the expectations are low, or is he better off going in somewhere where it's all nice and stable?
I think there's a couple of ways of looking at it. He's got a real job on his hands, looking at, you know, what I've seen so far from Sheffield Wednesday and what I've seen from that league. I think they're really up against it as far as climbing the table. But he's going into a team that, you know, can't really get any worse at the minute. So, you know, if he does make incremental improvements, that's gonna show pretty quickly. So it's as far as a first job in management, it's a giant of a club, isn't it? So it's a great opportunity for him. I don't know a lot about him, his background. I think he was the assistant to Hansi Flick at Bayern and Germany. So, you know, he's worked with really good players, top players at top level. So, and he's obviously really well thought of. I think it's quite exciting, and I love to see young managers get opportunities. So I think it's an exciting one for Sheffield Wednesday, but obviously it comes a little bit with the unknown that, you know, he's got no body of work as a manager to look back on, and you know he does join the club in a really tricky position in the league. But what he has got is he's got a lot of time to work and try and pull him away from that. I think obviously 30 plus games still to go, so plenty of time for him to get it right. But yeah, can't waste too much more time with poor results.
Yeah, they haven't won a game all season. They haven't scored a goal in their last four. Sam, is he going to be Daniel Farker or Jan Sievert?
Jan Sievert, the bloke that was wrongly identified in the crowd at Huddersfield. That was good stuff, wasn't it? I don't know. My thought process on this was that you had to go for someone battle-hardened, like, you know, Neil Warnock was mentioned, or maybe someone a little bit left field. I didn't think it would probably be a job for someone, maybe a British manager who'd been building their career and all of a sudden takes a risk to go there with all the kind of mayhem that's gone on off the pitch. So kind of does fit the brief that I was maybe anticipating. I think it's a really exciting appointment. I mean, they needed a bit of a plan, haven't they? Even though Darren Moore got success last year, I think it's looked a little bit of a mess this season. So he's got really good high pedigree. Maybe it's going to look a little bit like Southampton in terms of under Hasenhüttl with the energy, high level energy, loads of pressurising from the front of the pitch. And I think it's an exciting one. And if he can be able to focus on the role, who's to say that they can't turn their fortunes around? I think the players are probably there actually to play that type of football that I just mentioned. Not you know, completely dissimilar to some of the attributes that those four players in particular have got. So it's an exciting appointment, I would say. And he's able to get on with it and focus on his job, then they might yet challenge this year in terms of staying up. That is not the playoff mix.
Yeah, that'd be pretty impressive if they manage that. Birmingham are hoping that Wayne Rooney's going to lead them into the playoff mix. As expected, he's replaced John Eustace. Johnny, with this one, the headlines are, they've gone for the big name manager, the new owners. I wonder if maybe that's a little bit disrespectful to Wayne Rooney, who nearly kept Derby up despite having a 21-point deduction. It's not like he's a total championship novice, is it?
No, I think there's certainly, you know, unlike the role who's gone in at Sheffield Wednesday, there is, you know, there's some track record there with Rooney in that league, and obviously he's gone on to manage in the States as well. So it's not his first rodeo. He knows that league. I think he's done a really credible job with Derby. So they've obviously seen something that they like there. There's no getting away from the fact that, you know, with Rooney comes, you know, a big name, big exposure. So there's certainly that element of it for the football club as well. So I think I can see absolutely the appointment, and I can see why it makes sense. I think it's harsh. I think the other side of that is the harshness on John Eustace and the job that he was doing. So I think that's why people probably look at it and think, you know, might question it, because the guy in position, I think, was doing a really, really good job. I think I was six in the league, you know, having kept him up last year when perhaps people thought they would go down. And he was up against it, I think, as far as resources and stuff like that. And he's really steadied that club this year, and he's got them competing. And, you know, from the back of two great results, one in a derby, I watched that game, I thought that was excellent in that West Brom game. So as a fellow manager, to see someone, you know, we deem doing a really, really good job to then be out of work, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. But, you know, this is... you've seen decisions like it before, and you know, it's the nature of the game. But I think John comes out here with a lot of credit, and I like to think that on the back of that, you know, he'll be fine going to get another good opportunity elsewhere too.
Gary Cook, who's the Birmingham chief executive, Sam, he said on sacking John Eustace, "A lot of football clubs leave the manager to fail before they make a decision. I don't like that. I wouldn't be disrespectful to John in that manner. And as a football club, that's not the way we behave." That sounds pretty disingenuous to me. He's your mate. I don't know if you have a rule where you're only friends with people called John, but how's he going to be feeling, and where are you expecting him to go back into?
I thought you meant Gary there. That'd be good fun. No, I'm really disappointed for him. Like as Jacko just said there, as a someone I call a mate, and I think he turned down some brilliant opportunities in the Championship to go to Birmingham. Obviously, for family reasons, it was absolutely perfect. He's from Solihull, so I think sometimes you don't think about that personal aspect, which will be so upsetting for him, having been let go. But by all accounts, it sounds like he's covered himself with, you know, the utmost dignity. If he knew that this was on the cards weeks or maybe even months ago, to continue to do a brilliant job up to the last couple of games, getting those victories. But his stock's really high, as you said, so he'll walk into a really good position. He's got great experience now, I think 7 years as a number two to some big managers at QPR, and now gone out by himself and done a really good job when that place was desperate when he first went there, in terms of the beef between the fans and the ownership, the stadium falling to pieces, the lack of probably ability to really strengthen that squad. So he done an amazing job, brilliant person, like the ultimate professional. He was like that as a player, and I'm sure he's taken that into his management, so he'll be absolutely fine. And yeah, he's probably best off out of there, to be honest, because that place is changing and it's got a different plan moving forward now.
All right, we're going to do a weekend review later, but Johnny's got a training session to take soon, so next we're going to hit him with some quick fire questions. All right, Johnny, I'm sure you saw at the weekend that Gillingham caretaker manager Keith Millen tripped up Walsall's Tom Knowles and got himself sent off. It's a good opportunity for me to say the name Craig Breakspear, who was the referee in this game. Surely the best named referee in all of the EFL. You ever been tempted to do that? Just trip an Oppo winger when he's off down the run? I mean, you might as well take the red card, right? Look at your upcoming fixtures, think, oh, I could sit in the stand for these two. He might score here.
Well, we've got Barrow away and Morecambe away coming up in the next two, so...
You want a stadium ban then, basically. So that's a trip.
Might be a good time for it. To be fair, I think it was a good tackle for me. He's got a bit of ball there. So I have been tempted to. Like, well, probably not. It's probably more of a reactionary thing. I think honestly, that's probably what Keith's done. He just reacted in a moment. I don't think it was probably premeditated. But sometimes you do, you know, you can see an opposition player sprinting at the ball, maybe for a throw-in to try and do it quick. And you are tempted to try and get involved just to slow them down. But I think something always holds you back. And I think another split second and Keith pulls his foot away, but he's just got carried away in that moment. And yeah, he's definitely got a little bit of ball as well. So I think maybe a yellow would have been enough.
Regular listeners to the pod will know that Matt's about to quiz you on the Sopranos. He's got about 30 Sopranos-related questions before training. So the away trips, you've got Morecambe and Barrow, I think it is, back-to-back. Oh, I don't know if it's the other way around. What do you do on the away trip now during the travel, Jacko? Are you just purely invested in going through the tactics, or can you still get stuck into a box set?
A bit of both, really. Depends how long you're there. To be honest with you, like come Friday afternoon when you're travelling, most of your work's done. You know, you've delivered your final training session. You go through maybe plan A, maybe some what ifs about the game the next day. You know, what changes you might make in certain situations. That can take up a little bit of time. And then after that, you know, you can overdo it. You can overthink it. I think you've got to trust the week that you've had and the work that you've done on the training pitch. So sometimes if I'm depending on the journey, certainly these two coming up will be long ones. Get yourself into a bit of gritty crime drama from the continent somewhere normally.
Speaking of which, last time you were on with us, we heard all about your love for The Sopranos. First of all, as I was looking at your touchline gear on Saturday, I thought that's a man who's taken Carmine Lipitazzi's advice. A Don doesn't wear shorts, very rarely if ever seen in shorts on the touchline. I wonder though, right, I've got a couple of Sopranos quotes. I want to know how likely you are to implement these either in a team talk or a media interview this week. First of all, this is from Junior Soprano. Some people are so far behind in the race, they actually believe they're leading.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I could see myself using that one for sure. anything Uncle June, I think, is is usable.
Okay, well, I have another one from him, which I think applies quite well to management, actually. You steer the ship the best way you know. Sometimes it's smooth, sometimes you hit the rocks. In the meantime, you find your pleasures where you can.
Oh, that's perfect. I think that's translated is the one that everyone says. That's a more articulate way of saying don't get too high, don't get too low, just try and stay steady all the time. But Junior said it better.
So let's say somebody steps out of line on the training pitch when you leave us today. If you can quote the rules, you can obey them. You ever going to use that one?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's like my way or the highway, isn't it? Really, it's one, that one. You know, I wouldn't say I'm a dictator. I like player buy-in, but then there'll be times Sam will know, like certain players want to overstep, and certain players want to have too much to say at times. So it's like, shut up, it's my, we're doing it this way now. So that'd be a good one for that situation.
All right. Finally, you'll have my undying respect if you can ever work this into it. To maybe a post-match after a defeat. Why was I born handsome instead of rich? The famous Ralphie one.
I'm not sure that'd go too down. too well after a defeat. Yeah, I like it. Anything Ralphie's good, but I think I'll have to swerve that one.
I was desperately trying to like come up with something to get in on this. I was going to give you like three different options of different cuisines that have been seen across the series, but I'll just give you carte blanche. Like any item of cuisine, what would you go for? Vesuvio, like baked ziti from Karen Bacalar. You can go to the pizza parlor. What would be your one item? You can have anything.
Well, I've had the onion rings from Holston's, as you know, from the final scene. I've actually had them, so I've done a little bit of that. But I was watching one the other day, and quite early on, they're in Vesuvio's. I think Big Pussy's there. They ordered the zucchini. They ordered a load of plates of that, and I thought, oh yeah, that's a bit of me. That
fair, all right. Chicken parm for me. I've got to say, maybe one day we can all get together and have a Sopranos-based meal. Johnny, you got a training session to go and take, and a game tomorrow. So we appreciate your time so much. Thanks for joining us today, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Cheers, fellas. See you soon.
Many thanks to Johnny. Terrific to hear from him on the pod again. Next today, Sam and I are going to have a quick look back at some of the weekend's action. And we will start with the Nottinghamshire derby between Notts County and Mansfield. It proved to be a one-sided affair.
Barris helps it on one more towards Lewis Reed to fire it.
Yes!
Lewis Reed! His second goal of the season. Lucas Aikens pulls it across. There was Barris and there was Reed to have home.
Two very tall centre-halves. If Keeler Dunn can pick one of them out. Corner floated in.
It's headed in.
Yes!
Oh, yes! It's Bailey Cargill with the header from the back as he wheels away and gets a huge round of applause from the Mansfield Town fans who go bonkers in the Jimmy Cyril stand.
Here's Davis Keeler done with that delivery, right footed in the near post.
Aikens hit the post. It's got to be smashed in. Aidan Flint, he's got his first Mansfield Town goal as well. It's the tail of the two centre halves.
Keeler done on towards his left foot, trying to curl it, but he might have to go back to as he sends it into the area. It's been Aikens that goes in. Mansfield Town have got a fourth goal. Incredible. Davis Keeler done fires it low across the penalty area. There was Aikens in the 6-yard box and he just had to prod it goalwards. It goes past Slocum. Mansfield Town are in dreamland here at Meadow Lane.
This is where I point out that my place of birth per my passport is actually Mansfield, so I can claim this as a win for my boys in some regard. Luke Williams, Sam, said that Stags are the best team that his side have faced all season. It's funny, isn't it? Because on the face of it, I looked at this thinking Notts County have had an amazing headline grabbing start to the season and Mansfield have been a bit kind of chugging along. Maybe that's just because I'm sort of perma disappointed in Mansfield, but they're unbeaten during the season so far in League 2. They're only a point behind Notts County. They're in the automatic promotion places. They've been flying in the League Cup too. Have they been going under the radar or have I just not been paying attention?
No, I think they very much have been going under the radar. Maybe they haven't had the headlines, the coverage that the two promoted teams have had, as in Wrexham and Notts County. I think the football that Notts County have been playing has opened the wider public's eyes to them being back in the Football League. They've been really entertaining, clearly. But yeah, there's something there with Mansfield, isn't there? And I mean, perennially let us down on this show. I think both me and you have championed them the last year. They're like my Stoke City of the basement tier every year. I think this is going to be it for them. So maybe we are there now. I'm still fascinated by the team he puts out. I mean, no striker really on display for this one, although he's probably got one at left back and right back. I think I've said that so many times on this podcast, but they did what a lot of teams will try and do, really play aggressively up against Notts County. Maris, the kind of midfield player, was often the furthest forward player for Mansfield. Him and Keeler Dunn, Lucas Aikens, they did a really good job at disrupting Notts County's beautiful passing game. And that will be the blueprint for so many teams. But I would imagine not many will be able to carry it out as Mansfield did, because they have such power, especially in that area that I just mentioned, but also from the set pieces. And that's where Notts County are going to have to improve if they're going to be the real deal. I think that's 7 they've now conceded from dead balls. Only Tranmere with a worse record. And with Flint and Cargill attacking the ball as they did, but also the other end of the pitch, the way they defended, the experience, the nous. The big contrast for me was their performance and the performance of the Notts County defensive trio. So they'll respond. They've got too many good players, Notts County, especially in forward positions, I think, not to go close this year. But this was a little bit of a lesson from Mansfield, and maybe, just maybe, could be our year, mate.
It could be a glorious season for Mansfield. They've got Port Vale in the next round of the League Cup. Get through that, and they're at home in that tie, and they're in the quarterfinals. So we'll keep an eye on the Stags.
Best record when conceding first as well. So, yeah, they got that steeliness about them as well. And, yeah, I think it was a real contrast between the two teams in terms of the way they set up, but also the performance at the weekend. So it wasn't a victory they didn't warrant. That was fully merited.
Elsewhere in League Two, and we're going with League Two first because, frankly, it was a bit more interesting than League One this weekend, where most of the key games were postponed because of international call-ups. But speaking of key games, it finished Hollywood 3, Class of 92 2, or Wrexham beat Salford in old money. They sure love a late goal over at the Racecourse Ground this season. The 72, we love the EFL on Twitter, well worth a follow. They're pointing out Wrexham have played at home 7 times this season, and there's been a total of 41 goals scored in those games. Is Phil Parkinson pleased with his team's never say die attitude, or is he thinking, I wish we didn't go behind so often and concede quite so many goals?
I had a little look at that, and they're like, coming from behind record isn't as impressive as I thought it was this season, but yeah, they just ship in so many goals, Matt. It's incredible. And for someone whose teams previously I felt were pretty sturgeon and you know, tough.
Sturgeon is a mixture between sturdy and turgid, is it?
Yeah, it is.
They're
quite
different words.
I knew as I said it was completely incorrect, but I still went with it. That was the good thing about the way my mind worked there. But yeah, stingy, turgid. Turgid's not even the right word, but definitely stingy. I'm just incredibly surprised. What he will be chuffed about is his changes undoubtedly worked at the weekend, the depth he's got from the bench, the impact he's having. So he's got a bit of a problem now, because I think Fletch has been so good coming on, not just the goals, but his awareness in the build-up for, I think it was the winning goal as well. Such a clever footballer. I think it wasn't just him at the weekend either. I think there was a really good effect from the other substitutes. Obviously, Davis came on and got the winning goal. Interesting story. He was at Wrexham previously, went off to Brighton, didn't really make the grade there. He's 25 now, but found himself back at Wrexham, comes on and gets a really important goal. And, you know, this is a Wrexham now that haven't got Ben Tozer and Will Boyle momentarily in their defensive line. And still, I thought that it was probably problematic having them side by side because of the lack of pace. We know what Tozer brings in terms of leadership, his long throws. You know, he's been a really good player for them, but he's changed personnel there and still they've got this problem of shipping goals. So whether it's an organisational issue rather than a lack of pace, I'm not too sure, but Hayden certainly struggled at the weekend. Aaron James, a young player, played at right wing back and had a bit of a difficult afternoon. So it's not ideal at all defensively, but they're firepower going the other way is certainly getting them out of trouble, and it probably is the gaff. Take the owners out of the equation, probably is the gaff. You'd quite like a season ticket right now, because they're certainly getting value for money against the Salford team, by the way, that in Matt Smith and in Curtis Tilt had really good performances from that duo. And yeah, both unfortunate to be on the losing side, and Matt Smith could have very well had himself a hat trick as well.
Yeah, we can plug this now that we're not on the Athletic Network. There's a really good piece on The Guardian today by Barney Ronay, who went along to this game and did a long read on Wrexham and everything that's happened there. It's well worth your time if you got 10 minutes or so to take a look at that. Just finally on Stephen Fletcher, Sam, you mentioned that it's a thing for Phil Parkinson to consider whether he's going to start him. Is there any case that maybe at 36 years old, he said to them, look, I can come and do a job for you, but I probably can't do 90 minutes every week. Might he be happier being an impact sub than a star?
I think it's a rarity for any pro footballer who's still going into the training ground not to be starting games. Even in my penultimate year up at St Mirren, I knew that it was going to be difficult for me to get into the team because Stephen Thompson had scored loads of goals in his first season at St Mirren, was a kind of talisman for them. He was a local lad. We were very similar players. So I kind of went there knowing that it was going to be very difficult to dislodge him. And I became kind of okay with it. So maybe there is room for it. But I think the way he's performing, there's no reason why he probably can't be starting for 60 minutes or so, 60, 70 minutes. It's going to be difficult maybe at his age to play back-to-back 90s and play continually. But yeah, it's something that I think Phil Parkinson's going to have to decide. And Sam Dolby was the other one that I wanted to mention. He came off the bench and had a really good effect as well. So certainly looking really strong in the forward areas.
Also in League Two, Walsall beat Gillingham 4-1. Sam, you saw Gillingham last week at Pompey. They've changed their style, which is kind of what we were using as the justification for them ditching Neil Harris. It would appear they're going to need a bit of time to get used to said new style.
Yeah, interesting really, wasn't it? To obviously firstly make the decision to let Neil Harris go. But I think we had our idea about maybe why, the reasons behind that. And I think it's been really evident in the first couple of games under Keith Millen. Played through the lines at Portsmouth that night. I saw them. They lost. They missed a little bit of thrust trying to play intricate stuff. And there was kind of, you know, really aggressive physical defenders up against Tom Nichols and Johnny Williams on the night at Pompey, which was a little bit problematic. And the ball kept coming straight back. But I just thought it was fascinating, really, to see such a contrast maybe from how they've been set up between Neil Harris and David Livermore. So, yeah, this was a really difficult afternoon. I think Walsall really came to the party. So frustrating for them, given they lost last week 4-0 at Sutton, to respond in this manner just sums their season up, really. So definitely teething problems for Gillingham. Interestingly, to see Jaden Clark, for one, who did quite well at Pompey, and Johnny Williams not in the team here. So I think they do lack a bit of creativity, Gillingham. So I think there's room for improvement in that regard. Nichols and Macaulay Bonds are pretty good front two at the level. So it's going to be interesting to see how their season goes from here on in, if they can maintain their position, play in a completely different brand that they've changed fully, you know, in mid-season. For Walsall, yeah, real high-energy performance, probably because of the change at Gillingham in terms of the pressing from the front positions. Really like the look of Draper this season. He was complimented well by Ross Tierney in a central position, but obviously Isaac Hutchinson taking the match ball and takes all the plaudits for an amazing hat-trick. Incredible goals, the quality of them. I think he was playing off the left, so just coming in field, linking the play, and some brilliant, brilliant finishing in there as well. So, yeah, it's just all about consistency for Matt Sadler and Walsall. But this was a really good day and a brilliant hat-trick. So, so yeah. And it got me thinking, what was my favourite hat-trick of all time? Michel, Spain, 1990 World Cup against South Korea. Can you raise the bar on that?
Well, I genuinely thought then you were going to say, what was your favourite hat-trick that you scored? And I thought, that's pretty self-indulgent. But no, I don't remember Michel's favourite hat-trick. Crikey. Is the one that springs to mind? If I said Marlon Harewood against Gillingham, probably not many people would know what I was talking about. Robbie Fowler, that ridiculously quick one against Arsenal. That's kind of the go-to, isn't it?
I think with Marlon Harewood, I'm all over that.
Okay, maybe Michael Owen in Germany. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Good John Watson commentary. I'll get back to you. Speaking of big wins, Forest Green Rovers haven't had much fun this season. That all changed on Saturday. David's team got back on the horse, man. They beat Colchester United by 5-0. Did that pretty much save Horseman's job? I mean, Dale Vince isn't really a hire and fire kind of guy, is he? But they were stinking out League Two, having been relegated. So to say he needed that would be a bit of an understatement.
I don't really know what Dale Vince's vibe is anymore after the Duncan Ferguson appointment. I mean, this, I suppose, is pre-Duncan Ferguson the type of manager I would have anticipated him going for. So, yeah, hopefully he'll get some longevity. You can see what he's been trying to do. It's kind of this narrow 4-2-2-2, and they got a really good performance here. A lot of it went through Troy Deeney. I thought his link player, like Stephen Fletcher, actually, just from the goals, really. Troy was the first pass, and then getting runners off him. If ever someone can be made to look a good player. I think, I suppose, especially latterly in his career, Troy, if he's got pace around him, midfielders that want to run beyond him, his touch, his awareness, he's so clever at playing one and two touch. And that was really evident to me. Alongside Callum Morton, a player that I've long championed on this podcast, he looked really good in this game. Omotoy off one of the flanks, really good as well. And the luxury for David Horseman here as well was to change his front two, get Matty Taylor and Matty Stevens on, and they scored three goals between them. So front players scoring, a lot of injury issues as well, Forest Green Rovers. The two centre halves were a young kid called Welsh, who is on loan from Everton, 20-year-old. I think it was just one of his first appearances, alongside Don Barnard, who is a really experienced player and you can trust him, but I haven't seen him play centre half too often. So in the wake of, you know, some difficult selection problems for the manager, this was an emphatic victory and come on the back of six defeats in six at home, helped by a red card, of course, and a bit of a woeful Colchester. But yeah, brilliant display from Forest Green.
Yeah, good stuff for David Horseman. Dale Vince, we know, can switch his allegiances at the drop of a hat, having pulled his funding for Just Stop Oil and funneling it instead into the Labour Party. Answers on a postcard. Right, that's League Two. We'll go brief on League One next. Rico69 left us a nice review on iTunes saying, a lovely listen. The only EFL podcast I listen to now is It's All I Need. More Lincoln, please. Rico, we'll spare you the Imps chat this week, since you got beat at home by Burton, and we'll wait till you do something that we can praise. Let's instead talk about Blackpool Stevenage, the ageless Jordan Rhodes getting the opening goal here. Do you want to be positive about Blackpool, Sam, or point out that Stevenage are maybe dropping off a bit, third defeat and four for them?
Yeah, disappointing run for Stevenage. Has it ever been said that we've got sympathy with Steve Evans on the podcast? Definitely not when Clarkie's on. But it sounds like that Jamie Reid goal, I think it would have been the equaliser, was onside, so much so that Neil Critchley actually had a word with Steve on the way out for the start of the second half. So, yeah, they got away with a dodgy assistance decision there, Blackpool. But I think good value for the win. Jordan Rhodes with a beautiful assist later in the game for the third goal. CJ Hamilton, wasn't it? Putting the gloss on what I thought was an amazing goal, because the crowd were giving it the ole when the centre halves were on the ball, and then play developed, the LA's got louder, and all of a sudden Hamilton was in on goal, in off the right hand side, and capped a brilliant performance. I think this is very reminiscent of Critchley's first spell. All of a sudden, I think there's a bit of a change at Blackpool in that they're trying to be a little bit more possession heavy. And the likes of Dougal and Carey really looking back to their best, and an excellent front two in Kouassi and Rhodes. They seem to be really working as a pair, complementing each other well. Like I said, the third goal was a lovely assist from Jordan Rhodes, and his opener, I thought, was very reminiscent maybe of some of the goals he scored previously in his career, and just that knack of being in the right spot. I think he actually probably meant to deflect it. It was a shot from the edge of the box, and he's kind of diverted it into the opposite corner. And I'd imagine he's probably got a handful of goals very similar to that in his career. So yeah, really good win for Blackpool and starting to take shape for them.
Cambridge drew 1-1 with Shrewsbury. Normally that wouldn't merit a mention, but we've got to talk about Michael Morrison dazzling us with a brilliant solo goal.
Here goes Michael Morrison, dancing clear, beating a few challenges. This is wonderful. Morrison, wow! The captain delivers.
Now, this comes in the week that Eden Hazard announced his retirement. That was a nice tribute that Morrison paid to him, Sam, because that was a very Hazard-esque goal, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible goal. I think he went past five Shrewsbury players, which for a centre-half who I wouldn't even, you know, imagine steps out too often, goes beyond one player. This, it was just a remarkable slaloming run. Nice little calm finish on the end of it as well. I think he'd missed quite an easier chance in the first half, if I saw correctly, from kind of the edge of the six-yard box, the ball ricocheting around, and he missed the target. So it was a brilliant goal. You'd have wanted it to be the goal that wins the game, clearly. And then the equaliser was an absolute mess from a Cambridge perspective. I think they were anticipating the referee's whistle going. There was someone on the deck. They had copious amounts of opportunities to clear their lines, and Shrewsbury ended up scoring. I think on the face of it, when you look at the statistics going into this game, I mean, the lack of goals for both teams is really evident. They both had excellent starts to the season. Cambridge have not scored more than one goal in their last eight games, five in their last eight. Shrewsbury went the whole of October without scoring. They've only scored six goals this season. So Cheltenham, poor Cheltenham, sitting at the bottom of the division with just a solitary goal, are doing Shrewsbury a right favour, because the Shrews are really toiling in that regard. So, yeah, to get a goal, they won obviously a couple of weeks ago against Northampton, I think it was. But to get this goal, to get this point, I think it's a much better result for them. This is a fixture that Cambridge would have looked at and felt that they could get going again, because, you know, they're really lackluster at the moment. And one win in eight doesn't make particularly good reading. So, yeah, shame for Morrison, because it was probably the best goal I've seen this season at that level. Absolutely. And deserve to win the game. But small shoots of recovery for Shrewsbury, but nothing more than that right now.
All right. I was going to ask you for a quick word on Orient winning 1-0 at Carlisle, but I'm not going to do that. Sorry, Orient fans. I'm going to break some news to you instead, Sam. A tweet from Milton Keynes Dons. 27 minutes ago, as we record at 11:27, MK Dons has parted company with head coach Graham Alexander. Assistant head coach Chris Lucchetti will also depart Stadium MK. That is all that they have had to say about it. This is after they conceded twice in stoppage time to draw 2-2 at home to Barrow at the weekend. He only had 16 games in charge. Do you think that this is justified? And how likely is it that Carl Robinson is going to come back to MK?
Well, he's rumoured to be on the shortlist for quite a few jobs going right now, isn't he? I don't think that Carl Robinson would probably see that as a great career move, despite it being obviously the place which kickstarted his managerial career somewhat. So, yeah, I'd keep my powder dry on that one. I'm not too sure who takes that one on next. Not a surprise, really, given the way that they started the season. I think, you know, everyone anticipated them maybe having a bit of a go this year. Everyone was very enthused about, especially the forward options they had in the wake of that really good win at Wrexham. And it's tailed off pretty spectacularly, hasn't it? And you look at the team, and I think there's real quality there. I think they've underperformed for the last few managers, you know, certainly in the midfield and the forward positions. I mean, neither of the two guys, Lecco, wasn't it, and Issa, ripped Wrexham to shreds on the opening day of the season. We're even in the side at the weekend. Ellis Harrison is there now. Jack Payne, Gilby, you know, there's some really quality, probably League One players minimum in that squad right now. So I think they've been massively underperforming. So unfortunately, as we know, buck stops with the manager, but seems a little bit harsh considering we're second week of October. But yeah, the results obviously not been up to speed since that brilliant start.
All right, well, good luck to Neil Harris as the new MK Dons manager. That's my shout. I mentioned Twitter/X there. We're going to finish with a tweet of the week. It comes from Davis Keylor Dunn from the aforementioned Mansfield, this following their thumping win at Meadow Lane. He tweeted, 3,880 Stags fans there yesterday. Incredible sort of blowing wind emoji. Didn't stop singing the full game. Hope you lot enjoyed that Derby Day win. #yellows. I wonder if he should have gone #Stags. Other than that, though, Sam, this is a pretty perfect tweet as far as I'm concerned. He's got the number of away supporters absolutely spot on. Well worth a mention. Just nice stuff. I don't have anything cynical or sarcastic to say about it.
I don't like the number of fans.
But it's a massive number for a League Two game, though, for an away support, nearly 4,000.
It's down the road, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a flaw in that, and I'd have rounded it up. Nearly 4,000 would have been the way I'd have gone. But yeah, it's okay, isn't it? I like that he's kind of like gone heavy on the fan involvement rather than, you know, honed in on the set piece delivery or the whatever they did to work so much success from the dead ball. So yeah, and he's a good little player. I think he's had quite a lot of love on our airwaves over the last couple of seasons. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
At EFL What, that we are on Twitter, at What the EFL on Instagram and TikTok. Just wanted to say commiserations to Dave Wint, who's replied to Davis Keylor Dunn's tweet. We certainly did, David. And obviously what's happened there is he's gone to put Davis in. It's auto-corrected to David. He hasn't seen it. And then he's posted the tweet. Still got four likes, though. So probably worth it overall. And before we go, a reminder of the offer from from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. How does the rest of your week look then, Sam?
Quiet week, really, mate. International weeks kind of has that knock-on effect, doesn't it, where there doesn't seem to be any fixtures in any regard this midweek either. So, yeah, just gearing up for the return of the full shebang at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. All eyes on Cambridge against Colchester in the Football League Trophy on Tuesday, possibly. Full fixture list coming up this weekend. Then we'll run through the best bits from that on next week's pod when Adrian will be back with us as well. But until then, thank you for joining us today. Thanks to Johnny Jackson as well. Great to have him back on. And to Sam, have a great week. Whatever you're doing, we'll catch up with you again on Monday. For now, though, it's goodbye.